Okay, here we are. Welcome to the After Sunday podcast. My name is Corey Alsett. I'm our worship pastor. And as usual, I'm joined with Matthew Price, our lead pastor. And normally it's just the two of us, but we are very excited to have Tolu Ajele here with us. Tolu, of course, many of you will know Tolu. He is part of our community here. Tolu leads worship, and he's involved in, I know, children's ministry. And he has a wife. Her name is Kim. And a little son, a very cute son named Ruben. So, Tolu, it's awesome to have you here with us.
Yeah, welcome, Tolu.
Oh, thank you for having me. And I feel like I have to say, actually, you probably would have been better off having Kim do this because she speaks much more eloquently on these kind of things. And, you know, she studied them and it is very applicable to her work. So,
do you think she could she make it today, or is it too late now, probably?
Yeah, probably. But no, definitely, I'm happy to be here. And, obviously feeling a little bit nervous, but also really appreciate the opportunity to be able to have this conversation. So.
Cool. It's great to have you here. Yeah, it's awesome. Okay, before we get into the nitty-gritty, we should just ask a real quick question for each of us. Question, Tolu, what are you enjoying watching these days or reading? Are you reading something or watching something on Netflix? What are you guys into these days?
Yeah, actually, ironically, the reading and watching are kind of connected. Kim and I just finished watching a show called Little Fires Everywhere.
Yeah.
It's kind of a hot topic right now on Amazon Prime. And it's just kind of very relevant to these conversations anyways, dealing with race and prejudice. And then the book I'm reading is actually not the same author, but it's called Nine Perfect Strangers. But it's written by the woman who wrote Big Little Lies, the show was produced by the same people who are doing Little Fires Everywhere. So,
okay, yeah, very cool.
Enjoying that.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Matthew, how about you?
Well, we just watched the finale of Waco.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you did.
Oh, my goodness. Did you watch that?
I did.
Did you?
Yeah. Okay. That's like, we could do a podcast sometime about like end times and people who see themselves as the Messiah and the role of the U.S. government and military and oh my goodness. Like honestly, Tanya and I just were like, it was like,
yeah.
How do you end your day? Like when you watch this show, it's unreal. Cause I remember being 13 and watching the ATF, storm the Branch Davidian. And I remember like being a kid in Oklahoma, right? Watching this and having like a certain view of like what that was all about. Yeah. And it's interesting watching the show. Like clearly they've made some calls on history, but yeah, fascinating. So if anyone else has watched Waco, love to talk to you about it.
Yeah. I watched the first episode or two and then Sherry wasn't as into it as I was, but I like the fact that the lead guy was on, what's that? That football show, the, Friday Night Lights. And he does not look at all this. Anyways, if you watch that, it's interesting.
Is it like a teen drama?
That's a good show. Friday Night Lights is a great show. It's like six seasons. It's really, really good. Anyways, but yeah, Waco. I know I got to get back into that one. That looks really good.
Yeah.
How about you? Yeah. I'm still reading. Couple podcasts ago, I'm reading this book called A Little Life. It's a big book, and I've just kind of been slowly going through it. It's really good. It's not for the faint of heart. Like it's very it's pretty gritty, but it's about it's very, very good. It's about a group of friends. One of the guys has suffered kind of great abuse as a kid, like terrible, terrible. When I say great, I mean terrible abuse as a kid. And now he's a very successful person, but he's got all of these like really significant issues that he's trying to kind of work out in relationships with these people. And anyways, it's very beautifully written, but very, very, it's a bit of a, in some ways, a tough read because of the content in it, but man, it's really good. So, so we're enjoying that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's jump in.
Yeah. So, to those of you listening, thank you for tuning in. We just chatted through kind of maybe a structure for this podcast. So, we're going to work through three different kind of sections. And so we're going to start off with just a look at the Bible and racism. Then it's going to be followed by just listening to Tolu, to Tolu's story and some insights from him. And then we're going to end with trying to make sense of the times that we're in and what's going on in the world, especially politically. So, but if I could, I'd love to just jump into the Bible and just to kind of maybe say some things that may feel like common sense, but they're like, I think it's good to get us all on the same page and to actually be inspired by the biblical worldview. And so I'll do this quickly, but so just when we think about racism, the Oxford English Dictionary defines racism as prejudice, discrimination, or antagonism directed against someone of a different race based on the belief that one's own race is superior. Now, that is like, when we look at scripture, it's like total sin. Like, that's just not found in scripture. Like, that's not what followers of Jesus would do. They were absolutely opposed to this. And some biblical backing, just to refresh our memories here, are the Imago Dei. Like, that's Latin for the image of God in Genesis 1. So Genesis 1, 27. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. And then in verse 31, God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. So all peoples on the earth, right, are all cultures, all languages, like, he saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And then in the New Testament, we hear Paul talking to the early church just about, like, this new community, this new family that would look in its diversity would be unified in the Spirit. And so Colossians 3 says this: here there's no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all, which I find interesting because it's not that you don't cease to be a Scythian.
Right.
You actually, or you don't cease to be Jewish by ethnicity or Gentile, but that somehow in the church, the church becomes like this little embassy. You know, when you walk into an embassy, you're actually on the ground of that country, right? Like, even though, like, so if you're in London and you go to the Canadian embassy, like, that's Canadian land, right? So I love that idea of, like, the kingdom is the space where, okay, you're Scythian, you know, you're a Jew, you're whatever, but when you come together, you have one spirit, and it doesn't erase your skin color or erase your nationality, but it makes you united in Christ. And so there's this even playing field, which I just am so inspired by when it comes to New Testament. And just one other New Testament scripture is James 2, 8 to 9. James writes this. He says, if you really keep the royal law found in scripture, love your neighbors yourself, you're doing right. But if you show favoritism, you sin and are convicted by the law as lawbreakers. Now, he's talking about the poor and the rich, but I love that picture of you show favoritism, it's sin. Mm-hmm. Like, it's total sin. And I feel like Paul living today, he would say, guys, as you watch the things on the news, everything going on, the death of George Floyd and the topic of racism. Okay, first of all, Imago Dei, right? Genesis 1. Mm-hmm. Number two, in the church, we have been brought together in unity, and God is delighted in the differences of our skin, of our language, of our nations, but united. And then number three is favoritism. This kind of racism is absolutely forbidden in the church. Mm-hmm. It's total sin. So that's just kind of like a little, I don't know, like a primer on, like, and I feel like everyone listening probably assumes this, but it's just good, helpful to remember, like, we are opposed to racism. It's demonic. It's not part of God's heart. So, yeah. Totally. What do you guys think?
Mm-hmm. Totally. No. I agree with that.
Yeah.
100%.
Like, right. You're saying, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, what's there to argue with? Like,
that's, yeah, right.
It makes total sense. And
it's, yeah. And yeah. It's, I guess, maybe as we'll talk more about, but it's sad that we even, that in a way, it's sad that you start this way, right? Because you're just like,
right,
yeah, this should be a no-brainer, right? This should be, this of course is our foundation. Like, that is such, feels like such a an obvious, you know, tenet of what it means to be a follower of Jesus, right? What it means to be human.
Totally.
Yeah, totally. So,
But I found a little jewel.
Oh,
in the scriptures.
Do tell.
So I'll end section one here, but just with like this little story. So it's a really crazy story about racism in Numbers 12. So we're in this series, the desert, right, in the wilderness. Yeah. And there's this story where Moses marries a Cushite, and a Cushite is Ethiopia. She's black. And listen to this, Numbers 12. Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. It's interesting. Like, they don't like it.
Yeah.
They don't like the fact that Moses, a Hebrew, has married a Cushite. Like,
right,
there's this mixed marriage here. And it's like, they're opposed to it. And anyway, so there's this whole thing. And there's also some pride too. Like, Miriam and Aaron, they're like, is God only going to speak through Moses? So there's this kind of like blend of things happening here. But verse 9, I just find this amazing. the anger of the Lord burned against them, against Miriam and Aaron, right? He burns against them. And then a very odd judgment comes upon Miriam, right? She gets, her skin becomes leprous, right? So here she is, she's judging Moses' wife's skin, and God judges her with this, it's leprosy, but it's probably just a skin disease, right?
Right.
Like, that's a crazy story. God's anger burns against Miriam and Aaron, and she gets this stuff on her skin. It's as though her judgment on the skin color of Moses' wife leads to her having an effect on her own skin. Now, obviously, that brings maybe another podcast, God's judgment and stuff like that. But exactly. But I find Numbers 12 this fascinating, like, so there's racism, there's pride, but it was just this little gem of, like, God going, what are you doing? I love Cushites, you know, like, anyway, so just wanted to share that. I thought that was interesting.
It is. Yeah. I never caught that before.
So kind of section one here, just want to bring it to an end, but just with the reality of we do live obviously in a Genesis 3 world. So there's the fall and sin is alive and well. Mm-hmm. And I think anytime we take the Christian doctrine of the fall seriously, we realize, hey, like racism is, it goes deep, right? And we'll talk more about this later, but you know, the cure of the gospel to actually heal us and to get us back to that picture that Paul has of the church is so important. Anyway, so that's kind of part one. Just wanted to give a little primer there. Love to pass it over to Tolu. Just, Tolu, we'd love to hear your story and some insights for you, as just a lot has happened in the last few weeks. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. And I also did want to clarify too, like in the beginning when I said, I'm nervous, it's not because you guys are, you know, making me uncomfortable in any way. Just want to clarify that for listeners, but just because this is, it is a big topic. It's a big deal. Obviously it hits home personally for me. I was born in Nigeria. I only lived there for 1 year before my family moved to Canada. So, you know, it's obviously, I don't remember, but still it's the color of my skin. It never leaves me. So, I think there's a couple things that I wanted to say right off the bat. And just in that sense that, as we approach this topic, there's always that fear of saying the wrong thing. And I know I'm going to probably get home and think, oh, I wish I had said this or said this differently. Mm-hmm. So, it's such a huge topic and we can't, you know, we're only here for a little while, but, hopefully the little bits and pieces I can share of my story, can be helpful. I think a disclaimer that I wanted to make right off the bat is that I'm definitely in no way speaking for all Black people. I think that there's two aspects to that. With what has really, I feel, kind of exploded and been brought to light, not that it was hidden before, but just in so much more of a dramatic way, like the African Americans experience. And I do think there is a bit of a distinction there, because of the history of slavery and oppression, which, you know, that's not my story, or that's not my family's story. Immigrating from Nigeria, I was born there. So definitely there's still nuances of racism and things like that. But I do think there's a difference when we talk about, you know, the African American story versus me as a Nigerian Canadian. This is me kind of sharing where my journey, where I've come, where I am. But it's in no way meant to be, you know, this is speaking on behalf of everyone. And I think that's also important to remember, even as we listen to other people's stories, it's easy to say, like, oh, I have a friend who's Black and, you know, he says that he doesn't experience racism or something like that. And, you know, that may be his story, but it's not necessarily everyone's. And so, so I think just being very mindful of that is important as a start. And also do think it's really important to acknowledge that, I mean, had we even been having this conversation 6 months ago, I would have been far more on the side of, I don't really think racism for me has been or is much of an issue. And I owe that in part or mostly to the fact, I live and am part of a really loving community where I do feel accepted for who I am. And, And I'm very grateful that, you know, great friends and being part of this community and even in my workplace. And part of that, too, is that I work in a very diverse environment. And so I'm the only Black person there, but I am one minority in a group of minorities that actually make up the majority. There's more non, you know, people who are not born in Canada. There's more than those who were. And specifically white as well. So, I think being around a lot of other cultures regularly also, it can make that feel a little bit more natural as opposed to if I was one Black person in a group of just all white people.
Right.
In that kind of sense. So, saying all that, you know, I'm very grateful and I, you know, racism hasn't been something that I've had to really think about a whole lot. Because I have, I generally haven't felt, you know, discriminated against on a ongoing basis. So that being said, I have, and I kind of joked earlier about Kim being a better one to do this podcast, but she's been a huge help for me and just kind of, reflecting on some of these things and trying to call out areas where, you know, I've come to realize that I'm very quick to deflect and to pass off situations that I've experienced as, oh, okay, well, that wasn't racism. I think they meant something else, you know, trying to give the person the benefit of the doubt. And I think partly, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. I also, it's uncomfortable. Like as soon as you call someone out as, hey, that's racist, I'm uncomfortable, you're uncomfortable, you know, wanting to avoid that situation. But also, I've come to realize that acknowledging or receiving a situation as racist, it does, it hurts because you're acknowledging that in a way you were kind of made to feel less than or, so I think it's easier to even just say like, oh no, that's not what they meant, because then I don't have to admit that like, oh, actually that made me uncomfortable. And that reminded me that maybe you see me as different. And again, that trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, realizing, yeah, they maybe in their mind, different didn't necessarily mean you're beneath me, but still when it's said in a way that can kind of cut or be underhanded, acknowledging that, owning it, it has an emotional toll. And right. I think I wasn't always ready to take that on.
Tolu, can I just say, that's really helpful. That's really helpful. That's a great insight. Like just the fear of like acknowledging, oh, did I just have a racist encounter? If I acknowledge that it's a racist encounter, that would bring a profound pain and it would make it way bigger. And it's almost easier just to kind of keep moving.
Totally.
Tolu, that's really helpful.
Thank you. So I think, and I'll kind of go into a bit of my story as far as what's my experience been as, you know, growing up in an immigrant family. And it's funny, like I never really think of myself as an immigrant, being part of an immigrant family, but that is what I am. And I think I just really recognize that for me, and you know, this is every kid's story in a sense, wanting to fit in, not wanting to stand out, not wanting to feel different. But that is definitely amplified when there is this obvious visual thing that sets you apart from your friends. And again, very thankful. I had great friends growing up that accepted me and did make me feel like I didn't feel that I was less than or beneath them. But at the same time, I do have vivid memories of, in a sense, being ashamed of my identity as a Black person and just wanting to do everything in my power to you know, live in a way that was like everything except the color of my skin, everything that I can control, I'm going to kind of disassociate myself from that cultural identity. And actually, one of the things I also wanted to clarify kind of as a disclaimer is I feel like there's a lot of terms that we'll probably use, and again, you guys have like 1,000 people listening to this thing.
Right? That's right. That's
hundreds
right.
of thousands. Yeah.
For people out there, like, and as we get more and more into like you know, political correctness and the words, so even like Black, white, African American, a lot of these words that, you know, okay, what does white culture mean? What does Black culture mean? And you know, so when I say black or black culture, I'm saying that knowing that there isn't one black culture. You know, I'm from right. Nigeria, so when I think of my culture, I'm thinking Nigerian, but that's different from for people who grew up in or live in different parts of Africa, and again, African American. And so, you know, I recognize that there is that difference, but just, you know that obviously when I say black, I'm using general terms, but mm-hmm.
sure,
yeah, totally,
yeah. So I think, yeah, definitely. Growing up, I was very keenly aware of the fact that I didn't like the fact that I was black. I didn't want to be black. I didn't like being reminded that I was. It made me feel different. It made me feel isolated in a way. So even in that sense, where, you know, it wasn't kids being mean or putting me down, but just reminders, you know, feeling in a way it makes you feel a little bit lonely or just isolated in that sense, which kind of seeing now the layers and having lived that way for years and years and years, it is it definitely has had a toll in the way that I've grown up. Mm-hmm. So I mean, throughout my, you know, 30 years of living now, I've kind of distinguished between like outright and intentional racism versus like the more unintentional, like, you know, quote unquote, well-meaning. So as far as like outright intentional racism, thankfully I can say very few experiences. Mm-hmm. You know, like I remember one as a kid, you know, just having a kid, he didn't know me at all. I was skateboarding with some friends and he was down the road and waiting for his parents and he was shouting things, you know, at us, and that was one of those examples where my friend said, oh, you know, I think he's like, he's saying something to you, he's calling you these names, and I was just, oh, no, I'm sure he's just, you know, I didn't want to all of a sudden have that spotlight turned on me, and sure. and my friends reminding me of this, and my friend actually stood up for me, and when the kid's parents came and they were driving away, he stopped the vehicle and he said, hey, you know, your son was saying these things to my friend, and
wow.
the parents made him come out and apologize, and, you know, I really appreciate it. I thought that was just, you know, of course, at the time I didn't see it, but now in these discussions, I can see what a great example of an ally and an advocate. And, you know, and I'm just thinking now I should write that friend. I have him on Facebook and haven't talked to him in years, but
absolutely.
So I mean, there was that, and then even a more recent example, when I first graduated university, I was living in Red Deer, Alberta, and
Red Deer,
yeah.
I was expecting that from you, Matthew.
Yeah, actually. I know. That's where Tanya's parents are. But what's your connection?
My parents
Corey?
Lived close to there. They live, okay. And I lived in Alberta for a while. Like, I lived in a little town that was an hour and a half away from Red Deer.
Okay. Corey, this isn't about you. It's about Tulu. Tulu's halfway through his story.
It's been quite a while since I've said anything, so I thought I should. Okay. Sorry, go on, Tulu.
I just graduated. I had a car, but I sold it for love, you know. but actually, I like to put that spin on it. But yeah, I'd sold my car. I was about to propose. Well, actually, no, I had already proposed to Kim, but we hadn't gotten married yet. She's from here. Was going to move to Red Deer, so I was living there by myself. Didn't have a vehicle, but I had a job and was living in a basement suite. So I would walk or bike to get groceries. And so I went grocery shopping one day, and I was taking the bus, and so I had my grocery bags waiting at the bus stop, and these guys drive by in a truck, you know, the bus stop is right by the road, and, you know, wind down their window and yell, get a job, and then just drive off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in that moment, again, it was kind of like I could try and explain that away, but I mean, to me, that was a clear indication of, I mean, they obviously don't know me, but saw a black guy sitting at a mm-hmm. bus with groceries and probably assumed, oh, you're on welfare, you're, you know, lazy,
right.
whatever.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, those are kind of what I'll call the more obvious, intentional, outright, like that's racism examples, which, you know, again, thankfully that haven't been too many of those. But I think what I feel is more kind of coming to the surface now in conversations is the unintentional kind of instances and things that people say, not realizing it. And I'll touch a little bit more on this in the third part, but I think that is what I'm seeing as kind of a source of a lot of the defensiveness that comes out, is because all of a sudden this message is kind of being portrayed that makes people feel like, oh, well, I'm not racist. Like, I, right. you know, I would, mm-hmm. And again, it's, that's where, I don't want to get too much into this now, but my caution, I guess, would be that to encourage people to listen, that it's not so much you're racist, you're this terrible person, but hey, here's how something you may not have realized made a person uncomfortable. You know, here's the implications of that. And so, you know, even examples like that is, and you know, that this, these have been more recent examples to me, and, you know, people even within church circles where, you know, somebody told me like, oh, you're very Canadianized for a colored person. And, you know, something like that, that they thought they were paying me a compliment, you know, and, but even the fact that you think that's a compliment kind of implies, you know, those other non-Canadianized colored people, like you've come further than them in that, you know, just
that
kind of,
that's the language they used.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Those exact words, Canadianized. Yeah.
Wow.
And you know, of course, like they had no idea they were being hurtful. Right. And, you know, I'm actually sad that I didn't have the courage in that moment to say, hey, actually, you know, that made me uncomfortable. That, that was offensive. And then even a situation where I was playing worship on a team, and you know, I walk in, and the sound guy right away is like, and this wasn't here, by the way.
The sound guy. Right, dude, Corey's about to fire the sound guys. Which one?
Yeah. No. I was a guest on a team, and the sound guy's, oh, you know, great, we have a black drummer today, and like, okay, sure, you know, let's. And again, he's just I think there's also this mentality for some people of just like, we don't want to tiptoe around these subjects. You're white, I'm black, I'm just calling it like it is. I'm, you know, and that's clearly what he thought he was doing. And, you know, okay, like, sure, whatever. And then we set up drums. And then during the sound check, the entire time, he's just going, hey, black guy, do this. And black, and like from the back of the room, yelling down to the front.
Wow.
And that was kind of a case where it's like, hey, I have a name. And again, is specifically calling me black offensive? No, that's who I am. But when, and it can be hard to explain for some people, but just being singled out in that kind of a way, it made me very uncomfortable. And again, you know, I wish I could have kind of in that moment just said, you know, my name's Talu or whatever, you know. And you know, those are more of the more common situations, I think, that happen from time to time where it's like somebody who's not intending to be racist, and that I think that's where I can see that defensiveness come off of, oh, I'm not being racist, like, you know, and it can be easy to kind of jump to that. So
that's I was gonna just say, like, I can see how, like, even as you're just describing that, it's because you're saying, you've said, you know, both those times you're like, oh, I wish I would have had the courage to call him out a little bit or whatever, but I'm like, yeah, it's just too bad that you're forced into a situation where you're like, so either I just let it go and whatever, or I create a big scene almost, right? It's almost like there's something unfair being forced on you to say.
Totally.
So yeah, it's kind of like they're both not very attractive, actually. You know, the options, like, one is to create a scene and it'll be uncomfortable for everyone, but probably, well, obviously very legitimate. And yet it's like, do I really want to take this on right now or not? You know? So yeah, I totally get
thank
that.
You.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. Oh, I appreciate that. I think that's ways in which I've kind of experienced more of the, what I would say, like, racist situations or situations that made me feel uncomfortable specifically because of the color of my skin. But I think what I'm coming to realize now that maybe the bigger impact of all this, and again, like I said, if you would have asked me about this 6 months ago, I would have been, oh yeah, it's not really an issue for me, not something I deal with. But talking with actually my sisters are, you know, have been, you know, very, a lot more vocal and a lot more, just this has definitely, you know, hit home very, very distinctly for them. And having conversations with them has helped me realize ways in which I'm, like I said, I'm, you know, kind of quick to dismiss or brush off. And so I think the biggest, and actually just quickly to also point to that, because I do think for black women that this does hit on a whole other level, because, you know, in talking with my sisters, my conversations, I'm realizing like one of the biggest things that comes up is hair. For Black women, hair is huge because, you know, in this culture where, you know, just this very image focused, you know, media and things like that, just portraying this image of what, you know, a beautiful woman looks like, you know, as a Black woman, often you feel like you don't even have a shot because, you know, our hair is, it's tight, curly, poofy, you know, however you want to describe it. And so for all the things that have, quick side note, on Netflix, actually, there's a great documentary called Self-Made, all about hair. And this woman who kind of started a company on hair products for Black women. And yeah, so that definitely is something I'm realizing that is something that I haven't had to deal with, but like even thinking back over my sister's lifetime and how much time was spent, whether it was braiding their hair or, you know, using different products or, you know, weaves and wigs and all that kind of stuff, that just like, yeah, that is a whole other layer that I haven't had to deal with. But what I am recognizing that has been an issue is just the slow, a kind of like almost self-suppression in a lot of ways that I have been, you know, it's really tricky for me to explain it, and I may not do a good job articulating this, but at the same time, as like I've said, I've been very, very blessed and I'm very thankful that, you know, pretty much all my life I've had great friends. Currently I have really good, very supportive friends who accept me for who I am, who didn't make me feel like I was less than them in any way. But at the same time, I'm realizing that I definitely tried to hide or put down parts of myself, and not because a friend came out and said, you know, we don't like this about you, and I, you know, it's right. It's, you know, it's internalized. But yeah, just thinking about, I remember, as you know, with my family being embarrassed by a lot of the, you know, kind of the Black cultural things. And again, in my case, thinking more specifically Nigerian, you know, we'd have Nigerian get togethers with people from the community. And those were like horrific for me. Well, just in the sense that I was embarrassed, like I was, oh man, like I would like probably crawl on the floor and die if one of my white friends came to this, because you know, these people, they're loud and could come across as obnoxious, and the food smells weird, and all just all these things that felt very un-Canadian to me. And you know, and my desire to just try and blend in and be as much like my friends as possible, wanting to disassociate myself from that kind of identity, yeah, that was a very strong, like I have very strong memories of that kind of throughout, honestly, like, yeah, if I'm honest, my whole life, really, until more recent, where I've really started to appreciate and embrace my Nigerian heritage. And I actually got the chance to go to Nigeria this year for the first time since moving when I was one. And yeah, I definitely am realizing how much I've been missing out just because I really wanted to kind of remove that.
What was that like, Tolu?
It was amazing. It was I got to meet a lot of family members that I haven't. You know, most of my relatives are still in Nigeria. It was just so eye-opening. It really showed me how easy it is to, when you're here and that's over there, you form these ideas and opinions of the way life is there. And to just come and realize that you were totally wrong, and to see like there's a lot of beauty here. You know, even like things like, you know, people saying things like, oh, you're so lucky your parents immigrated here. Like, oh, that you didn't have to grow up living in Nigeria, you know? And if I'm honest, I would have said the same thing at one point, but then to be able to be there and experience their life and see, like, I mean, one, just like that, yeah, my image of the way life was there was wrong, but also to feel that sense of belonging. And it's a bit tricky for me because I don't speak, English is the is the main language there, but Yoruba is the native language that my family, mm-hmm. my parents speak. And so in gatherings and things like that, there still is a lot of Yoruba being spoken. So you do feel a bit of an outsider in that sense that, okay, I can't fully engage, right. But there is still just a sense of belonging and, a sense of like, these are my people that I didn't even know I was missing because I never had it. Like it's not like I've been living my life longing for this connection, but then to be there and to have it, it was just like, wow, like this feels really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So I think kind of just to bring that, wrap that all up, like, in that kind of sense of, realizing that there kind of has been that self-suppression or trying to disassociate that part of myself. Kind of now seeing the toll that it's taken, like I'm even looking back and I love the way one of my sisters, Grace, I have to give her credit for this phrase, but she coined it curating a palatable version of myself. And wow. I realized like 100% that's what I've been doing my entire life. Like, I remember very distinctly coming to a point in my life where I realized, where I kind of was like, you know what? I'm not really going to rap anymore. Like I used to listen to a lot of rap, hip hop and I wrote a lot of stuff myself. I was part of me and two other Indian guys that we formed this rap group. And I just remember kind of coming to a point where I was like, yeah, this isn't, and even though it's like, I enjoy the music and I like it, realizing who does this appeal to and who does it not appeal to? Like, this is not, quote unquote, kind of that white, cultural experience, I guess, that I'm, versus like a guy who plays acoustic guitar and sings in coffee shops and, that's right. Kind of the, mm-hmm. And so it's not even like I started playing guitar because I wanted to appeal to white people. Like, it's not that, but, and I already play guitar. I was already rapping and I just so happened to, really kind of enjoy going that direction. But I do remember making it kind of coming to a point where I was like, yeah, rap, especially kind of the direction I was going, where I was, in university, getting a more white collared, I guess people can't see air quotes, white collar job. And this world that I was moving into, like, yeah, rap doesn't really fit in there. So, that's kind of something I was just like, yeah, I'm kind of putting that away. And I remember thinking about it, even as I've started to discover some great hip hop artists and things like that. I remember pulling up to a traffic light, I'm listening to music in my car and thinking, oh, what does a person pull up beside me, see a black guy listening to hip hop? Like, it's just like, oh, there's the stereotype,
Right.
Versus if I've got like, of Monsters and Men or something like that, playing. And so like, I'm not even kidding. I often don't really listen to hip hop while I drive because I'm conscious of this image of this stereotypical. So and
can you use that phrase again?
Curating a palatable version of myself. Yes.
Wow.
And specifically, palatable to, quote unquote, white culture. That's right. Is kind of right. Where, what I'm coming to recognize. And again, it's not that I've, I have to like guitar now. Like, I genuinely love playing it, but
totally.
I was definitely also aware that this kind of fits a little bit more with my, the community that I'm a part of. I think, it goes a lot deeper than I even am realizing now. Like, those are just a couple of examples where I'm starting to realize, like, yeah, I have been very aware and mindful of the image that I present and not wanting to come across as stereotypically black. Like, that has been a conscious thing that I've been doing throughout my life and realizing I don't want to do that anymore. This journey is very, very fresh for me. Like, these are honestly all conversations that I'm kind of having along with the rest of the world over the last 2-3 weeks. And yeah, so I think just I'm even trying to figure out a lot, you know, there are other areas where perhaps I have been doing this because, yeah, I know it goes deeper than I've even realized because it's just so core to who I am. Like,
right.
I can think back to as small as 7 years old, just like, you know, trying as much as possible to kind of what seems white, what seems Canadian, and try to, you know,
fit in
with that. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's definitely something that I recognize and I'm like, okay, yeah, I do want to deal with this. As well as, you know, part of what my trip to Nigeria showed me, there's so much about my culture, my heritage that is beautiful and amazing that I want to be a part of, that I want my son to be a part of. Yeah. And again, I have to give Kim huge props for that because she has been such a huge voice of, you know, like Ruben needs to have a strong sense of identity. I didn't have that.
Yeah.
And so as his parents, we really want to embody that for him. Because yeah, I think, yeah, there's so much about my parents, you know, culture and so many relatives that I still, and thankfully now with my trip that I get to interact with, you know, we chat on WhatsApp and stuff like that. I want more of that. So that's kind of been my journey and experience, I guess my story for the most part.
Very cool. Beautiful.
Yeah. And thanks. And I feel like Tolu, like the gift here is that like, I can totally, I'm hearing your heart and I'm hearing the lens by which, you know, you've looked back, you're seeing your upbringing. And some of those, insights are really powerful. Like I don't have that experience. Like I don't have that experience of like, you know, trying to fit in with my Oklahoma culture, right? Or trying to curate a version of myself that's palatable. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think every kid wants to be cool and do cool things, but not in the way you described it there. And I just, I'm so grateful for that perspective. Mm. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Tolu. That's really awesome. It was funny, just as you were talking about Ruben, I was going to say, I wondered if having like a son, if that maybe also kind of added, which it sounds like obviously it did with your conversations with Kim, because it's like, what a beautiful heritage that you want to kind of, give your son, like, hey, this is your history. These are your people.
Yeah. And it's funny actually you say that too, because again, that's one where Kim totally gets the credit for that, because she brought up at one point like, oh, you know, we got to even think about when he goes to school, are there other kids who look like him there? And I think I actually said this, if I didn't think it, I'm pretty sure I said it out loud, is like, does that really matter? I grew up with kids who didn't look like me and I'm fine. And now I'm clearly recognizing that. No.
Interesting.
Yeah. Very cool.
Well, just as we, you know, maybe wrap up part one here, this is a two-part podcast. I think like it's an important, like what you've just done here for us, Tolu, I would just like encourage our church, because mostly it's our church listening to this podcast, to be like, how can we sit down just like this and have these conversations in order to learn from each other? And I do apologize for that conversation that was had with you, like in the foyer or here at the church. That was tough to hear that's part of our church family, right? So I'm sorry, Tolu, but
thank you.
But conversations like this are so important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah, exactly. And Tolu, I mean, you know this. I hope you know this. You're such a gift to me. I think I mentioned it earlier, but Tulu's on our team and he leads worship and involved in other areas too. But yeah, I've just so loved having you involved the way. And I kind of hear that. I'm like, that's too bad. And I just appreciate, I think something that I always appreciate about you, but even hearing this story, I'm like, you are such a man of grace. Like you really do embody that. And it's funny, sometimes you say grace and then it's like, I don't mean at the exclusion of being firm when you need to be firm, because you're also that. And even hearing you say, like, you know, yeah, I kind of wish that I would have maybe said something. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense too. But anyways, it's great to hear your story. I didn't know so much of that. And that's really cool. Mm-hmm. When did you go to Nigeria again?
So I was just in February. I mean, the timing couldn't have been better because I literally got back and a week later travel
everything
was just
shut
being
down.
All the COVID. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yikes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome, you guys. So that is that's the end of part one. Please stay tuned because we are going to have part two coming right up. Thanks again to Lou.
You're welcome.